This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor. Jeff Mellor.
Welcome into White Sox Weekly. Jack McGrath in for Jeff Mellor today. Jeff off for the holidays. I hope you had a nice, safe, fun Thanksgiving weekend. And we certainly turned into some of that holiday weather today. Doesn't feel like baseball season out there. The snow is starting to come down. And White Sox fans, happy holidays. Starting at just $66. Get a White Sox holiday pack redeemable for more than 50 games throughout the 2026 season. To learn more and purchase, visit whitesox.com/packs. Once again, Jack McGrath in for Jeff Mellor today on White Sox Weekly. Aiden O'Connor's our producer today. You're going to hear his voice throughout the show as well. We are going to be answering today some of the biggest questions for the White Sox in the offseason, because dominoes are starting to fall, and one of the bigger dominoes that we expected to fall this offseason in Major League Baseball was Dylan Cease. And he has signed with the Toronto Blue Jays, that's according to Jeff Passan. It is a 7-year, $210 million deal for the former White Sox pitcher. So it has deferrals, kind of like that Shohei Ohtani contract did. So the present-day value is more like $182 million, but still a massive deal for Dylan Cease. He didn't have a great year last year. He's been somewhat inconsistent, but he still led the league among qualified pitchers in strikeouts through nine innings with 11.5 Ks through nine. He had a 4.55 ERA, though, in just 168 innings pitched. So if that gives you any idea of what the market's going to look like this year. Now, he was one of the highest-level starting pitchers out there. There's a lot of good power bats on the market this year, a lot of good high-level power bats. I mean, you have Pete Alonso, Kyle Schwarber, Kyle Tucker, Cody Bellinger. Cease was probably the best arm out there this year based on how well he's pitched over the past 5 years, but still a massive deal for him, and that's going to give you some indication of what the market could be this year. Don't expect the White Sox to shop at the top end of the market this year. That's kind of what we've heard from Chris Getz this offseason. But I do think you can expect them to make some key signings this offseason. It's a team that's on its way up. Improved the win total by almost 20 games last year. But the key domino that needs to fall for the White Sox, at least in my opinion, before we get things started here for the offseason, is Luis Robert. This has been one of the biggest questions for the past two offseasons, and very well may be the biggest question for the White Sox heading into next offseason as well, because he has another $20 million option going into the 2027 season. Will the White Sox trade Luis Robert, who still has value, for a load of prospects? But it might not be peak value for Luis Robert, because he has had a few down years and has shown that he has had a few injuries. This is the biggest question for the White Sox to start this offseason off. And I think there are two spots, and correct me if I'm wrong, Aiden, where the White Sox will have an opportunity this offseason to trade Luis Robert. One of them is right now. Because by trading Luis Robert, the White Sox hypothetically clear up $20 million in cash, which will allow them to go sign maybe a Ryan O'Hearn at first base or somebody else, or add on to that rotation, or maybe the bullpen. It would clear up a lot of cash for them to use to invest in the future and maybe some more veteran pieces to bring on to help this young core. The other option would be to slow play it. Wait until you get closer to the season and some team misses out on one of these big power bats and feels like they need to make a move. Maybe one of these teams that's in contention for a Schwarber or a Bellinger. Maybe it's a Yankees or even the Dodgers or some other team that's willing to pay $20 million for Luis Robert and take that risk on and do it at the end of the offseason. There's going to be a window in the middle of the offseason where I don't think you're going to get very much for Luis Robert. It's either you do it right now and free up that cash, which I think would be one of the main purposes of trading Luis Robert, or you wait a while. Chris Getz has kind of been bashed a little bit for not coming down on his price for Robert. He said this last week when asked about how he's kind of being bashed for not coming down and being stubborn in his asking price. This is what Chris Getz said about Luis Robert and that asking price last week.
I don't follow it that closely, but I do know that, you know, I have heard that, you know, teams have been frustrated with asks, but that frustration is stemming from the fact that they really want the player. So there's different ways to view it. You know, and the beauty of it all is he's our player, and he's someone that we're proud of, and we know that could help us win ball games. And if that means that, you know, we're stubborn or we're asking for too much, so be it. But he's our player, and it's our right to handle it that way.
This is it's kind of a funny quote from Getz, and he's right. It is his right. But Chris Getz doesn't exactly get fired up. He's kind of always pretty monotone in his press conferences. That might be the most fired up I've heard Chris Getz, and he wasn't exactly fired up in that clip. My personal opinion, White Sox need to hold on to Luis Robert this year, because I look at the names in free agency, and if you're not spending at the top of the market, there aren't a lot of young guys that have the same potential as Luis Robert or help the team in the same way Luis Robert does. Yes, the cash is important. The $20 million is important, especially for a team that has been for the majority of the past few years in the lower half of spending in Major League Baseball. I would keep Luis Robert this season and let it play out. Last year, towards the end of the year, after July, now he got hurt again. From July on, he hit .293, a .349 OBP, and an .808 slugging percentage. And he was on pace from July on for what would have been a 20-plus home run season again. If Luis Robert can be half of what he was hitting in his big season 2-3 years ago, then the defense and the running is so good that it makes him, once again, an above-average player. Once again, I mentioned Aiden O'Connor's with us. Aiden, I think the spot to trade him, if the White Sox are going to trade him, is right now, but I don't think they should do that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And you mentioned, you know, slow playing this thing. And it almost seems as like Chris Getz in this front office has been slow playing it for years at this point, for at least a year and a half. But every time that, you know, you talk about the deadline last season, you talk about now, it's a question of the health. And you mentioned, since he came back at the end of July, great numbers. Played in 110 games, and I think that's the catch where teams are maybe a little hesitant. But to go off the point you just made, you have the speed, you have the base running ability, the outfield ability. He's a true five-tool player when healthy. It's a question of the health. And another good point you just made there, Jack, is you never know what's going to happen when the season starts. There's certain teams that you know are going to go out. They're going to spend a ton of money. There's some teams that just don't. And you look at a team like the Milwaukee Brewers from last season, who weren't expected to be up there. They're never expected to be up there at the top of the payroll, but expected to be there late in the season in the playoff hunt. If a team like that, and you can go across the entire MLB, a team gets off to a hot start, and they're looking for that key piece to come in there and help. I think that's the time that Chris Getz can not only get what he wants for Robert, but maybe more.
And being stubborn is the exact right way to do this with Luis Robert, because there is a player in your system with immense talent who's only 28 years old still. I think with Luis Robert, we have a tendency, because he's been with the team for so long and already has 6 years of service time, that it's easy to look at him and think this is a player that's past his prime, but not necessarily. I think we've seen the best we're going to see from Luis Robert. But there is still a chance for him to get back to close to the levels that he was a couple of years ago, when he absolutely dominated, when he was hitting for great power. I don't think from here on out he's a .223 hitter like he was last year. I think he's much better than that. I think he's better than a 1.5 WAR player. And if that's the price that teams are trying to buy low on, then that's not the price you want to give. And I think the key, too, is, Aiden, that $20 million option. So the cash part of it, the Sox have already decided they're going to either trade him or pick up the cash for this year. The other thing with that is there's another option for Luis Robert next year as well, a $20 million option for 2027. They can pay $2 million to get out of that option. So that's change for these teams. But a $20 million option going into next season for Luis Robert provides a lot of flexibility for the ball club. They could pick up the option. Let's say Luis Robert once again is hurt for a majority of the season and performs like he is. If they truly don't think they can trade him, then you don't pick up that option. There's a lot of flexibility for the ball club in terms of Luis Robert Jr. We are going to be answering all the big questions of the offseason. Kind of, Scott Merkin has a really good article on MLB.com right now, which asks some of the big questions of the offseason, taking a little bit of inspiration from him, answering some of the questions that he posed to fans about the White Sox offseason. We're going to answer some of the big ones, and we've also created here at ESPN 1000 some of our own questions, a few of those. Ethan Katz has moved on. What is the impact of Zach Bove going to be? Also, another trade that maybe the White Sox should be looking at. Do they move one of the catchers, Edgar Caro or Kyle Teal? They also have Corey Lee in that system still. There's a logjam at the position, and the White Sox have a surplus of talent there. Will they move on? We're going to answer those two questions next. What's the impact of Zach Bove, and should the White Sox trade one of their catchers? That's all next here on White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
White Sox Weekly.
On Chicago's home for sports.
On the ESPN Chicago app. 100.3 HD2 and ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. 1000.
MLB offseason dominoes starting to fall. We mentioned it earlier. Free agent starting pitcher Dylan Cease signed with the Blue Jays a 7-year, $210 million deal with deferrals. Dominoes are starting to fall, which means the White Sox dominoes in the offseason will start to fall pretty soon here. Welcome back into White Sox Weekly. I'm Jack McGrath, in for Jeff Meller, who's off for the holidays. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving. James Fegan of Sox Machine is going to join us at 1:30. He's going to be answering some more questions for us about the White Sox offseason and give his perspective on some of the moves he thinks the Sox should make and some of the impacts of this new staff. What myself and our producer Aiden O'Connor were talking about before break was that we don't think the White Sox should move on from Luis Robert at this exact moment. And if there's a time to trade him, this is one of those key times right now, because it could clear $20 million of salary for the White Sox as they head into free agency to try to complement this roster. But one of the reasons we don't think they should trade him is because of the immense potential at 28 years old Robert still has. And Aiden, you mentioned at the break something to me which I found very interesting. And it's this new staff that the White Sox have could have an impact on him.
Yeah, in 110 games last season under Will Venable as the new Sox manager last year, like you said, 233, not great overall. But in a season plagued by injuries, once, you know, for lack of a better term, once you let this new staff get their hands on Luis Robert, yes, you had some layover from a previous staff last year with Venable. You saw him clean house a little bit and get his guys in there that Will knows can help these young players out. Granted, Luis Robert is not a young player as compared to Chase Mydroth or Colson Montgomery, but if he trusts these guys to get these hitters to play well and teach them, you know, I almost just said the fundamentals of baseball. We're a little bit past that at this stage, but let them work with Luis Robert and see what happens at the start of the season.
Well, the thing is with Robert, it's in there.
Oh,
you,
yeah.
You know it's in there.
Oh, yeah.
And the question is, which adjustment does he need to make to get it? And this last staff wasn't able to fix that. Derek Showman is the new hitting coach for the White Sox. He, in 2025, he was the assistant hitting coach for the Marlins. Prior to that, he served in the Minnesota Twins organization. But maybe he can unlock something in Luis Robert, which can help him find the next level. Somebody else that was added to the White Sox staff is Zach Bove. And this was a little bit of a surprise to me, but I guess it makes sense in that you mentioned Will Venable bringing in his own staff, putting his stamp on the organization. Ethan Katz let go by the White Sox. It looks like he's found a new home in Houston as their assistant pitching coach. But Ethan Katz, as the pitching coach, was let go last year. And the pitching under Katz has developed quite well. I mean, all the way back to Giolito, to Crochet, to this year, Shane Smith developing as a Rule 5 draft pick and jumping up an entire level. It was a little bit surprising to see Ethan Katz on the outs, at least for me. But it might make sense in bringing in Zach Bove, who can, It seems like his philosophy is to do a lot of the little things that may kind of go under the radar. Do those well, the simple things, and that is controlling the strike zone and controlling the base paths. Last season, the Kansas City Royals, oh, this is according to Fox Sports Stats, only gave up 70 stolen bases against them. The White Sox were near one of the worst teams in the league at that. They gave up 170 stolen bases. That's 100 over the course of the season. I mean, we're looking at the two-thirds of the games, the White Sox are giving up a stolen base where the Royals weren't giving up a stolen base. So that is a tremendous number. This is Zach Bove speaking on CHSN's White Sox podcast a couple of weeks ago, talking with Chuck Garfine about controlling base runners on the base pads like his team did with the Kansas City Royals last season.
It definitely came up on the call. It's obviously something that Will is, you know, passionate about. And then diving into the White Sox pitchers, like, yeah, you didn't realize, yeah, this is definitely an area, you know, we can clean up. But, you know, I think, number one, again, a lot of credit to the Royals. Just what I learned in that process, we were very good at that the past 2 years. And, again, I can't take credit for that. But I learned, hey, maybe let's focus on a little differently. I think every team in spring training, like, makes this a priority, right? PFPs, yeah. Feeling your position stuff. But, like, we did, I think, do some really unique things in spring training, setting the tone. That was really, you know, as game-like as possible, quick. It wasn't a lot of standing around. It was active. We made it really fun. We tracked it. We measured it. And then throughout the season, right, we did have some unique ways of doing it. And obviously started to share some of that with the White Sox and through the process. But it is going to be a focus because, hey, I love, you know, pitch grips and striking guys out and walks and all that stuff. But we all know, like, limiting free passes, you know, the extra bases is a huge part of it, especially when you're playing in those one-run games, right? At the end of the day, our job is to prevent runs. So, like, we're going to try to check every box that goes into that. And obviously controlling the running game, being quick, you know, to the plate, that's part of it, is something that I saw worked at a very high level, and definitely look forward to bringing some of those things on top of hearing, you know, what the current staff and Will have in play for that area.
Both brings up the one-run games there, and stolen bases are a huge part of that. The walks are a huge part of that. The White Sox were atrocious in one-run games last year. And one-run games, those are supposed to be the toss-ups, right? The White Sox were 15-36 in one-run games last year. Get that back to 500, and the White Sox record looks a lot better. Their expected wins-losses on the season was 70-92. That's looking at some of the analytics and the math. That's on ESPN.com right here. But the White Sox actual record was 60-102. So 10 wins less than their play would indicate and their run differential would indicate. And that's because they were giving up those little things in those one run games. The walks last year at some point, Jonathan Cannon's a good pitcher, but the walks doomed him at points last season. You have Sean Burke. The walks were an issue at points last season. These are guys that have good stuff and could be contributors. But the walks just sometimes, especially in the bullpen too, it made you put your hands in your head watching White Sox games. But that's something that it sounds like Zach Bove, whose Royals gave up some of the least amount of walks in all of Major League Baseball last season, nearly 100 walks less given up by the Royals than the White Sox. And Bove was an assistant pitching coach for the Royals last year. So control is something that you would think would improve this year, and that seems to be a focus of Will Venable.
Yeah, I distinctly remember both Will and Ethan Katz, who, as you mentioned, is no longer with the organization, last year at a certain point, talk about, and it all goes back to the youth of this team, and especially your starting rotation and some of the guys, like a guy like Winkelmann Gonzalez, they started using out of the back end of the bullpen at certain times. They want the strikeouts. They want the big numbers. We saw it with Shane Smith. We saw it across the entire starting rotation. But at certain times, pitching for strikeouts is going to lead to those wild pitches, those walks. And they start to add up, especially when you have two solid catchers, and we'll get to them in a little bit too, that can throw guys out. If your pitcher isn't paying attention to the guys on base as well, the catcher doesn't stand a chance.
No, you're exactly right. We'll get to those catchers in a little bit because I know we talked about it. Will the White Sox move on from one of their catchers? This is Zach Bove talking specifically about that, how he plans to help these pitchers limit their walks. Same podcast from CHSN, the White Sox podcast.
Yeah, count leverage, right? I talk about leverage in two ways. Leverage a guy's superpowers and then obviously
count leverage, right? Leveraging, putting the guys in better position to succeed from a count state. Again, nothing groundbreaking there. But I think how that's message, again, how it's tracked, how we train for it, whether that's in pens, catch play, understanding that individual, like what is, I think identifying walks, that's the easy part, right? But is it solely a zone issue? Is it a pitch location issue? Maybe there's a delivery issue that's tied with that. Maybe it's a mindset issue. Maybe the guy is, you know, the intent's not there. Maybe he's trying to run away from barrel or contact or stuff like that. So it's educating the individual on like what makes you really good, again, which in turn gives that guy individual confidence to attack the zone more. I think of count leverage as an invisible force. And you know what I mean by that is a 2-0 count to 0-2 count. We know the outcomes are different, right? But same pitch, same location, like we'd rather be in the 0-2 count than the 2-0 count, right? So it's just understanding that, tracking that, getting on the good side of that. We get to two strikes more often. We'll take our chances with the outcomes, but obviously with the walks, we're gonna lessen the opportunity to walk the guy if we're in those 0-2, 1-2 counts more often than not.
Get ahead early, man. Pitch to contact a little bit, but get ahead early. And that's kind of what Bove is preaching. And Aiden, to your point with the young guys, I think the team still, we saw it last year, has a little bit of growing up to do. And that makes sense with a young team that's been in the rebuilding phase. But for a young pitching staff, I think Zach Bove is going to be a guy who can help this team grow up and make fundamental baseball plays so they're not giving up those walks and giving extra base runners for a team that, talent-wise, the past few years hasn't been able to allow that and win games. Now, if you're the New York Yankees and you have players who you're paying like crazy, like an Aaron Judge, you can get away with some mistakes. The White Sox are a good team. They have talented players, but the past few years they haven't been at the talent level to where they can compensate for making some of those mistakes, and they have to play clean baseball to go out and win baseball games. And Zach Bove, it sounds like from a pitching perspective, is encouraging that the team plays clean baseball. And that's what I'm excited for, to see a cleaner game from the Chicago White Sox going forward. We mentioned the catcher conversation. We'll talk to James Fegan as well about this coming up from Sox Machine. He's going to join us here in about 5 minutes. Edgar Carroll, Kyle Teal, Corey Lee. The big question for me is, can they play clean baseball at the catcher position? And I think we saw all of those guys take a step forward. Teal seems like the more athletic catcher behind the plate. Carroll threw a lot of guys out on the base paths. His back pickoff was phenomenal last year at the end of the season. He threw multiple guys out there. They both seem to be able to play defensive, good defensive baseball at catcher. But there's two of them. And my concern with Edgar Carroll as a DH is, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, Aiden, I don't know that his bat translates to a plus bat if you have to move him to either of the corner infield positions, which we haven't seen the Sox necessarily have a willingness to do, or to a DH position. He is valuable because his bat is good and he gets on base at a high level as a catcher. I don't know that he has the pop in his bat to be a designated hitter, which makes me lean more towards if you can swap Edgar Carroll for a high-level first base prospect, I think that's something you have to consider, or a corner infield prospect, or even a corner outfield prospect. That might be something you consider if you're the White Sox. What do you think?
I completely agree, and I think it's different. Like you said, Caro's great at throwing guys out. Corey Lee was great at pitch framing once he kind of settled in the back half of the season. They both do something great, and it's not to only focus in on the two, because you mentioned Corey Lee as well as the third catcher. And Corey Lee's bat is someone who I think at the highest of highs does give you more pop than Edgar Carroll. But it's the debate of you're not going to have three catchers.
In modern day baseball, you can't carry three catchers on your roster, especially three catchers who haven't shown the positional flexibility that these three guys have. One of these guys is not going to be on the opening day roster, or at least shouldn't be. Maybe they all will be, but by the end of the year, I can't imagine all three of these guys are on the White Sox roster. So that's a move the White Sox are going to have to think about making. We have to go to a quick break because we're going to get James Fegan of Sox Machine. We'll dive into this more with him as well because it's another one of these big questions of the offseason for the Chicago White Sox. Sox fans, Sign up to become a White Sox insider and get special offers, single game ticket presales, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit WhiteSox.com/insider today. If you want to talk White Sox, 312-332-3776 is the number. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
White Sox Weekly, Jack McGrath in for Jeff Meller, about to join James Fegan on the Yuengling guest hotline. I do see a comment in the Twitch chat, though, that I want to address real quick. It does say that if the White Sox trade a catcher, they better get a haul. And I do think that if the White Sox were to trade a guy like Edgar Caro, they would get a top prospect back because he is a top prospect. So you would be trading him for a top prospect, just maybe somebody that has more positional flexibility, maybe a pitcher, maybe somebody with more positional flexibility that you can put at one of those corner infield slots or in the outfield. If you're watching on Twitch, just a reminder, our video streaming is brought to you by the LaPorte Invitational. The LaPorte Invitational is the Midwest's premier high school basketball showcase, January 9th through 11th in LaPorte, Indiana. For tickets, LaporteInvitational.com. You can always watch us on YouTube and Twitch. Just search ESPN 1000 Chicago on both of those sites. Let's head out to our phone line where we find James Fegan of Sox Machine. James, happy Thanksgiving. It's starting to get a little chilly here. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. But we're talking about the catcher position and if the White Sox are going to move on from one of their catchers, because they once again, going into this year, have a surplus at the position of good young catchers. What are your thoughts on the situation? Do you expect the White Sox to move on from one of these catchers? And do you think they should move on from one of these catchers?
So I thought like your comparison was helpful because you're talking about like what your value for moving them one right now would be. And you could kind of get an equivalent value for, you know, a different position, which is like not like a finishing move, but maybe something you're doing is you're trying to form your team more into like taking a step forward in terms of contention. You know, it would be helpful, be useful, make your roster make a little bit more sense, but they're still kind of in the adding value stage. I don't think you could, like, you traded Garrett Crochet, like, obviously that's the best player in the deal and most useful, like, present value player, but you multiplied it into, like, potentially, you know, three or, you know, two to three, you know, main players. I don't think you could multiply with, you know, Caro or Teal. You're not turning them into, like, two future prospects or something like that. It's kind of, like, equivalent but shifting position, which maybe is more of a move for next year. And certainly in talking to, like, the White Sox, both privately and like publicly, they've kind of said, yeah, that's something we're going to consider at some point, but this offseason is probably a little early for that. And I think it's both like that factor and, you know, if you're probably, you know, picking one between two, and I definitely think they're kind of internally tilted towards Kyle Teal at this moment. With Caro, you're definitely not trading him at top value. Like, I don't think, you know, he had a good rookie season, a solid rookie season, his bat played there, you know, like he got good reviews from the pitchers. But in terms of like the questions about what his framing will be down the road or how much power will that be able to show at some point, I don't think you're at the peak of this. And, you know, kind of them believing in Caro, I don't feel like they feel like they would get what the top price would be at this juncture. And believing that he has more upside to show, I think if you're really considering both where the team will be in a year where it's more like let's form this into a really full lineup and also –
yeah, James,
better
I got
player than he was his first year. I think next year makes a little bit more sense for that.
Yeah, speaking of Caro's potential, his home run number, his slug numbers weren't as high. Do you think there's more power in that bat? Because how I look at Edgar Caro is he is a plus bat at the catcher position, but you start to move him into that DH role, and he's not necessarily as much of a plus bat at that role. Do you think there's more power in that bat, or there's more to see from him at the plate too?
Certainly more than he showed last year. I don't think he's a, you know, 25 home run guy like the exit velos never suggests that in the minors, but he had consistently hit like 15 homers a year in the minors. And I think something like that is more reasonable. He struggled against right-handed pitching more than he normally does last year for a mechanical reason that he was pretty open about near the end of the season and looking towards fixing, and kind of was optimistic about what the torpedo bat was doing. So I don't think he's going to be a guy who, you know, can't slug 400 the way he was kind of dealing with being a singles hitter and, you know, singles and walks guy this past year. I think he can be a 10 to 15 home run guy. I think he can slug over 400. I think there's more doubles and extra base power in there, especially if he kind of gets his mechanics in place against right-handed pitching, which what really is he's able to prop up his line by just feasting on lefties as much as he did last year, which speaks well to the tool. But I don't think we've seen the full capabilities of the left-handed swing yet. So I think there's a little more there.
James Fegan of Sox Machine joining us here on White Sox Weekly. Jack McGrath in for Jeff Meller. Speaking of unlocking some power, Luis Robert, I feel like this is going to be, this was last offseason's question. It's this offseason's question. Might be next offseason's question, too. What would your prediction be right now for Luis Robert? Is he on the roster at opening day?
Yeah, I think so. Like, when you have a team that's open to trading him and, you know, maybe not the strongest free agent market, I can't say like, yeah, put it in writing in ink or anything like that. Like, it's still a little bit flux, but I don't think there's going to be a major change in what his value was and how the White Sox were approaching it from this trade deadline over the winter. Certainly not after he got hurt and kind of, you know, it was kind of both his second half reaffirmed what people thought about him in both ways, where you saw him be a lot more productive, but you also saw the injury side of it, which is why his value has been tricky to pin down. Other teams thought the Sox were holding out for what Robert's ceiling was in terms of trade value. They weren't just trying to, you know, get off him. And the White Sox kind of said that we're okay with that. We're not going to try to, you know, sell somebody who's been really important to our franchise and we think has potential just for like whatever we can get if it's not going to be impact. So I think they're content to wait around. And I don't think that the value is going to change in some big way until he starts playing well again and stays healthy for a long period of time.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I don't think they should trade him at this point. I think you got to hold until he starts to show some of that potential again, especially at the plate. He's always going to have the speed, but you need the potential at the plate. Maybe some of these new assistant coaches can help bring that out of him. You just wrote a really good piece that I read on Sox Machine about Zach Bove and what he can bring to the table. It was very in-depth, and I appreciated it. We also just played some of his quotes about limiting walks and controlling the base paths as well. What do you think the main things that Zach Bove, the new pitching coach for the Chicago White Sox, replacing Ethan Katz, what do you think Zach Bove brings to the table?
So one thing, like, he's very open-minded. I think, you know, two children of the internet like us can appreciate, like, someone like him who entered in the coaching, you know, he didn't pitch, like, at a high level, so, and he was, like, a hitting coach at where he was originally at, and they switched in the pitching. So as much as, you know, he pitched in college a little bit more than us, but he really learned a lot of his trade by, you know, reading up on driveline or watching interviews with pitchers and seeing grips. Now, he had the opportunity to apply them with pitchers, you know, and do a lot of trial and error more than the average person. But it's someone who's very, like, open to outsider sources of information. But that said, going into, like, specifics, like the things the Royals did last year that you would love to see come over is obviously they controlled the running game really well, like best in the league by far. And the White Sox have been, you know, a laggard in that area really for the last 5 years. Not even when they were good, they didn't control the running game very well. So bringing some of those tactics would obviously be useful, but, you know, something Bove mentioned specifically is that the Royals had a lot of success with expanding guys' arsenals, where even if they're a four-seam guy, just having them throw a couple sinkers in the game just to throw off hitters and make it a little bit harder to square up. You don't need a great second fastball or something like that, but something to throw off hitters and add a little, like, you know, hitch to their timing was something they had a lot of success, and, you know, they didn't allow many home runs just because they were not very easy to square up because they're always throwing different shapes at guys. So you saw a little bit of that with the White Sox last year, you know, some fits and starts with it, but somebody who's coming over has had a lot of success and, you know, made some young pitchers like Chris Bubich and Noah Cameron outperform expectations with stuff like that. I think that's kind of what you're hoping for, especially with some of the guys like Burke or Cannon, you kind of felt like stagnated at points during the last year and had to get sent down for portions. Giving them some extra tools to get through hitters, to get weak contact, that could lead to them getting closer to maybe what we expected them to end 2025 looking like.
Yeah, I think you saw a few pitchers last year, Shane Smith being one of them, that just added an extra pitch and it took them to the next level. And if that's something the White Sox continue, it's clearly something the White Sox organization and Will Venable believe can take a pitcher to the next level. So if he continues to do that. One thing I noticed that Zach Bove said, he said on the CHSN White Sox podcast in his interview, he said that they asked him what he sees his rotation being. And he did. He said all the guys who are in the rotation last year are going to have a chance, but he also believes there's some guys maybe coming up through the system that could have a chance at the rotation next year. Do you think there's anybody that might be going under the radar or maybe even one of those top prospects that we could be looking at as a key part of this rotation next season?
Well, you got a lot of potential areas of influx. You got a lot of guys coming back from TJ. Obviously, that wouldn't be like a big thing until the All-Star break. It's really the earliest you could really bank on anybody, but Drew Thorpe, Kai Bush, guys who we were thinking of at the end of 2024, seeing them, what they can do back, that could be one avenue. They were really hoping that Noah Schultz and Hagan Smith would be guys who were knocking on the door at the end of this past season. That didn't happen with Schultz getting hurt and, you know, Smith struggling with control more than they anticipated, but good, healthy springs where either one of them can put them on the doorstep, and they obviously both have this upper-level talent where they could kind of shoot through very quickly as long as the organization's willing to try them out, and I think they are this year. But, you know, somebody I've been high on from their, when they were drafted, just on the raw tools he had, who really put it together last year, Terry McDougall just got added to the 40-man. That dude can throw upper 90s. He has two very nasty breaking balls. He barely used his changeup last year, but that's the pitch he's been throwing since he was like a little kid because his dad wouldn't let him throw breaking balls when he was little. He's got stuff where if, like, he's throwing strikes now, and he was last year after he really, like, dedicated himself to his offseason conditioning and went to, you know, Cressy Sports Performance in the winter, which he's done again this year. He's a guy I think can really pop. I don't know, like, if it's starter. I don't know if it's, like, a Grant Taylor type of multi-inning nasty reliever role, but, like, that's impact stuff in the system that put himself on the doorstep of the majors last year. And that'd probably be my sleeper of, you know, who could kind of surprise you, because I don't think that's a name that was really being touted as the future until what he was showing down the stretch last season.
Yeah, 3.23 ERA in Double-A last season. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is the highest level he's played at so far Double-A, I believe? Do you think he's going to be one of those guys that could make that jump straight from Double-A to the big leagues and make the opening day roster?
I think if he were doing that, that would probably, like, it would take, like, an awesome spring training, and I feel like if he started out in the majors, it would probably be more likely in relief. And, you know, he's even said as much than starting. I imagine a little bit of, like, I know they're a little bit wary of putting guys they really care about in that Charlotte environment. And Tanner's not like a big ground ball good dude who would necessarily be protected from how homer friendly that place is. But I think he's a guy who probably breaks in midseason a little bit more, especially, you know, he got up to 113 innings last season, but he hasn't thrown more than that. So I don't know if they step on the gas pedal to have him up in March that might lead to him running out of innings, but certainly someone, if he pitches well midseason, you can see him doing something and looking exciting.
Last guy I want to ask you about here, Braden Montgomery could fill a very key outfield spot. Where do you see him in the calculation here? A, as the White Sox address the offseason, because they probably need another corner outfielder or at least outfield depth. Where do you think he plays in terms of how the White Sox are going to plan out this offseason? And will we get some indication based on how the White Sox do plan this offseason as to whether we'll see him this year?
I think he is your long-term, like, as we stand today, obviously he has to perform, like, he's your right fielder of the future. I don't think that happens opening day. I think that's something he has to perform really highly to make it a mid-season possibility. There are some strikeout issues there. It got close to 30 in Double-A. It's not like that's something you can just coast by, but I think you still have to round out your outfield like you're not going to get contributions from Brady Montgomery. I think you need legit starters there. You can't just have somebody who's going to, you know, be a placeholder for 6 weeks and then, you know, just be Brady for the next 10 years. But I definitely think you are viewing him as someone who's looming in that long-term picture rather than you're trying to get, like, your right fielder of the future on the open market this year. That, now, they're in a position right now where they just need outfielders of any stripe and they can't be too picky of it. Like, taking a chance on, like, Everson Pereira in that trade, that's exactly the sort of stuff they should be doing. So you might see them kind of stacking post-hype prospects like that. But I think Braden's still probably the leader in the clubhouse, so to speak, of who you can really look in the system and say, like, I think that guy has a future role in this outfield. Whereas, you know, beyond Luis Robert, there's not really that many certainties in the outfield right now.
All right, James Fegan, a Sox machine, joining us here. Last question I have for you. Any names or any players you're keeping an eye on this offseason? Anything you heard for the White Sox?
Not really. Like, I think everything's going to be in that one-year I think if the right situation emerges, or if it's a starter they really want to eat innings, you can see them throw out a tier deal. But I feel like it's so many. It feels like a lot like last season, where it's like, hey, can we build like a veteran platoon in the outfield corner on the cheap here, or do we need one like kind of steady infielder around this out this mix, rather than seeing somebody who's really going to come and be a star contributor, or you're even like an everyday guy. Really clearly. I think they kind of have to scrounge around and be opportunistic, like whose market kind of falls, who kind of needs an opportunity for playing time to reestablish what they've been in the past, or who's kind of a prospect who's kind of run out of runway at another team, who used to look like a top 100 guy, but now just needs a chance to play. I think that's kind of the level they're shopping at. And, that can be hard to predict. That's kind of, you got to be ready for your opportunity to strike there.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time, James. James Fegan of Sox Machine joining us on the Gingling Guest Hotline. James, stay warm out there in the snow. It's getting messy out there. Stay warm and happy Thanksgiving.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Thanks for having me.
All right. That was James Fegan of Sox Machine. Coming up next, our producer, Aiden O'Connor, called me soft. And I didn't like it, but I think he might be right as to the reason why he called me soft. I'm going to tell you why he said I was weak and soft. That's coming up next here on White Sox Weekly. I'll also tell you how it relates to the White Sox. That's coming up next, White Sox Weekly, ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
On the home of the Chicago White Sox.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Sox fans looking for a great Black Friday or Cyber Monday deal? We have you covered now through December 5th. Shop our fall flash sale and save up to 35% on single game suites for select 2026 games. For more information and to purchase your suite, visit whitesox.com/flash sale. Now, why our producer, Aiden O'Connor, called me soft, and I think it might be fair, is it was cold out on Thanksgiving. So my cousin, he rented a rec center, and it had a little turf field, and we played our Turkey Bowl indoors. How this relates to the White Sox, you ask? Well, Justin Ishbia met with the Pope about 10, 11 days ago now, and he told the Pope that he might be looking to build a new stadium for the Chicago White Sox. Well, personally, it did feel fake for me in terms of playing football indoors. Well, outdoors is a whole lot better, and it feels like real baseball and real sports. So that's how it connects to the White Sox. So if they do eventually build a new stadium, 2029, the lease expires on Guarantee Right Field. Well, I hope that they are able to keep it outside and not play indoors. Ron on the south side, real quick. We have 1 minute, Ron. You wanted to talk about Miguel Vargas. Ron on the south side on the phone line.
Yeah, you know, he started out pretty good the season, and remember, because he struggled in 24.
Yeah.
So just wondering, do you see him as a utility player? Where will he
Miguel be? Vargas, I think he's important for the corner spots, either first base or third base. I maybe he can play the outfield. I don't see him as a middle infielder from here on out, and I think they're solidified with Montgomery and Chase Mydroth in the middle infield for the most part, and they also have some younger prospects. Jacob Gonzalez is one of them who can play the middle infield. So I see him more as a corner infielder, and I think that's important because that's a place of need right now for the Chicago White Sox. Thanks for the call, Ron. I appreciate it. And before we get going here, stay up to date on all things White Sox by following the team's official social media accounts. Don't miss a minute of the action on and off the field. Follow the @WhiteSox on social today. That's going to wrap us up on White Sox Weekly. Jack McGrath in for Jeff Meller. A big thank you to our producer, Aiden O'Connor. Jeff will be back next week. Rule 5 draft coming up. White Sox have been good. That'll be next week on White Sox Weekly. LSU at Oklahoma coming up.